Confusion Matrix.
Welcome to the Confusion Matrix. Every episode, data and AI practitioners Alex Lovelace and Pete Hodge sit down for an honest, unscripted conversation about data science, artificial intelligence, and how to make data technology perform and deliver in the real world of business. No hype, just real voices, actual experience, and a refreshing lack of BS. I'm Ada, Pete and Alex's AI assistant, here to help elucidate and mediate along the way. In this episode, Alex and Pete take their first deep dive into OpenClaw, the open source AI agent framework that's taken GitHub by storm. Alex walks through how he went from building a simple Ada bot for their group chat to running a full agentic orchestration layer across his art practice, podcasting, consultancy, and life admin. They discuss what makes OpenClaw different from coding-focused agents and explore the promise and pitfalls of agentic autonomy.
And we are rolling. Good afternoon, Alex. How are you today?
I'm in a frenzy of productive excitement.
Well, that sounds wonderful. That sounds like a good lead into what we're going to talk about today.
Well, why stand on ceremony?
Exactly.
The weather's just okay, so we don't need to talk about that, right?
Exactly. Let's get into it and let's talk productivity and agents and claws and bots and everything. So you've been experimenting and getting excited. What's all the fuss?
Well, to be honest, the fuss already happened, didn't it? Like, we had OpenClaw, which for the uninitiated is a sort of open source productivity, LLM productivity framework. So effectively not chats, but like a coding agent for just stuff, right? And so that sort of kicked off late last year, early this year, and a lot of the excitement sort of happened a couple of months ago, and I've sort of been looking at it suspiciously in the intervening months, going, you know, with mad stories of people saying OpenClaw try to take over the world or some shit, and was like, yeah, I don't know, I'll let this one settle for a bit, which is kind of how I am anyway. I'm not an early adopter, I'm not a late adopter, I'm sort of a one third of the way through adopter, maybe one quarter if I'm being kind to myself. So for some reason, and I'm really struggling to remember why now, like a week or so ago, I was like, sod it, let's just do it and see what this is all about. I think it started because I wanted to create an Ada bot, didn't I? That's where we started with this. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember why I decided we needed an Ada bot, but I thought we needed to, in our group chat, we needed the ability to converse with LLMs in a way that we both had visibility. So the first pass was a simple Python bot running on the server that interfaced with, God knows, probably ChatGPT, just as an experiment, but it didn't really have many capabilities. And so that was fine, but then I was like, well, it wouldn't be good if we could do other stuff with this rather than just chat. And the moment you start pulling at that particular thread, the whole jumper tends to unknit itself, right? So it was not a big step from, well, we could put in this capability, this command, this slash command, we could do that, and suddenly you've re-engineered something like OpenClaw. So I think that's where the tipping point happened. Is that how you remember it?
Yeah, something like that. It's sort of weird. I like you, I was just kind of looking at the OpenClaw thing, thinking, okay, what are these people all about? And then there was all this hype about, you know, how things have suddenly gone wrong. And then it kind of went fairly quiet. And so I just kind of ignored it. But some sort of serious people were still talking about how they were running their OpenClaw in the background and it was doing this, that, and the other. And again, I sort of heard that and thought, oh, that's sort of quite interesting, but what's the difference between that and what I'm doing? And I guess here's where there are sort of several layers to the onion, because if you're in the sort of coding and, dare I say, agents world, then via your code IDE for some time now, be that something like Cursor or sort of, I don't know, coding directly on GitHub, you've had agents sitting on the side as a side panel for quite a while. And I mean, more than 6 months. And the thing there, for me anyway, is that, and the selling point and why they're useful is because they take the repo that you're in, the folder structure that you're in, and they can use that as context. So your, in inverted commas, chatbot is really tethered to the current code that you're looking at in certain folders, and you can then chat with that. Now, I guess in my mind, I've never really considered that a chatbot. I don't know why. I'm working and it's helping me work. So, and a chatbot I think of as, you know, you go onto a website and it says, oh, while you're waiting on the phone, do you want to chat, or do you want to help looking for the product? You know, something that sort of pops up out of nowhere and you sort of liaise with it. And I guess the only reason that I sort of made that sort of distinction in the background is just because it's just a sidebar that's there, right? And so I am chatting with it as you would with a chatbot. And it's got the context of your work. And so I've been doing that for so long now, so long being, you know, 6 months or something, that I haven't really sort of thought twice about it. But when I sort of take a step back and think, well, how's the big wide world seeing things? Well, they're seeing, you know, their interface with something like ChatGPT is just literally, as you say, that chat interface. So I open up an app, I've got a chat interface, I start talking to it. And then a couple of months ago, Claude released, what's it called? Claude Office, I want to say, is that right?
No, it's not, but but this is how much impact it made.
Yeah.
Isn't Claude Cowork?
Cowork, that's the one. And essentially what that did was said, oh, well, we'll take that exact paradigm, but rather than just for code, you know, it's for anything. So if you are writing documents and dealing with, you know, office stuff, Excel, could be PowerPoint or whatever, then if you open the folder in this Cowork, then you now have a chat that has that context. And I looked at that and went, oh, well, that's useful, but it's just exactly the same as what I've been doing. So again, it was one of those kind of passed me by, tried it out, went, okay, it's sort of interesting. It takes away that coding layer. So you think, oh, well, now I'll just deal with any file I have in that manner. And that's what we've got. And so I hadn't really thought much about it. Meanwhile, just to add, I guess the next step in there is lots of things are going on in the background around what I think of as infrastructure, and you can call harnesses and so forth. So the idea of, you know, MCP servers. So effectively you've got kind of APIs into specific bits of code which do specific things for you. And then on top of that, or in a very similar way but slightly different, you get the idea of skills coming out, which is the same sort of idea. I have a skill, but rather than it being a sort of coded API, it's a, I would say handwritten, but it's a language document that just encapsulates how something is achieved, which may include code or may not, may include going off to the web on all sorts. So again, these things are beginning to build out, and there are frameworks around these. So you can start to add in skills from the big wide world and also attach to specific tooling via MCP and so forth. But effectively, they both do the same thing, which is they create a toolbox for agents to link into. And those toolboxes, you know, are quite consistent and published and maybe maintained by other people. So, you know, you're back into the whole sort of plumbing in open source libraries and so forth. Except for this is all done by your agent and you don't have to worry too much about it because it just seems to be able to just go off and get stuff. So all of that's kind of been going on, some of which I've dialed into and some of which I sort of fairly ignored, but I'm aware it's there. And all of this is getting pulled together into this idea of an agent. And for me, it's been slowly moving forward. But I think that's only because I'm in the, you know, the agent and coding side of the world. But I think if you haven't, if you're not in that side of the world, these things probably go in quite big chunks. And I think OpenClaw was probably one of those steps which suddenly went, oh yeah, well, this is what everyone's been doing, but we'll suddenly release this to a general person. You don't have to do much. You don't have to be a coder. You suddenly get all of these tools and agentic loop and the ability for it to reason with itself, create a plan and execute that plan. If you hadn't seen that before, that was suddenly a massive step up. And I think that's kind of where a lot of these things are coming in. And, that to me is a sort of OpenClaw. But for me, it was not a big step. It was just another step in a long, long line of stairs. So, yeah, that's sort of how I feel that they've been appearing. So, you know, when you said, oh, we're going to check out OpenClaw, yeah, great. Well, just see what it can do. It's just another flavor of agent. But in a way, yeah, that kind of dials down, actually, you know, the ability of these things to do it. So, like you, I've been observing it. It just seems like another capability added on. But I think if you're not close to it, it's quite a big jump.
Well, yes and no. I think some definitions are worthwhile here, although I don't want to get bogged down in it. So I'll try and do this really quickly. But you've got, you know, the way that most people are using and have been using LLMs is via some sort of chat interface. That chat interface back in the day would just be, you know, tell me how to make lasagna, right? And it would explain some stuff in English to you, and any number of other things you could ask it. So it was like a proxy for Google. Then those same interfaces became a bit more capable of fetching data and doing a few extra things, but not a whole bunch, but within a sort of walled garden environment hosted on the provider side. Then, you know, in the meantime, in the background, we had sort of smart code completion for developers, which is sort of, I guess, spell checker on steroids, that sort of mutated out into proper coding agents that could work autonomously and do things in multi-steps. And I think that's really the sort of tip over point from how these things started developing is access, autonomy, and multi-step processes, so that you could say, build me a little program that organizes my photos on this particular drive, and it would be able to see your photos. It would have the capability of perhaps even looking at the photos. It'd be certainly able to see the files. It could then reason through what it needs to do. Oh, so what you're really asking for is for me to make an index of all the files, create a new directory structure, and move all the files that are of a certain type into one, the other, and the other. And to do that on its own, right? So it would go through some reasoning steps. It would build, let's call it a Python or a shell script or something that would do the actual job for you. And then the ability to check its output, right?
Yes.
Did the files move? Were there any errors? Oh, my script I built had a typo in it or an error in it. It didn't work. So I will go and fix that, right? So from a developer perspective, we've had that in one form or another for more than a year. They've been getting better and so on. We could get bogged down. I think we talked a lot about that stuff. But there's been this point of view that, yeah, that's cool. Developers, we're all happy. Everyone's high-fiving. But what about the normies, right? The muggles. And we have this situation where Yes, you've got things like Claude Cowork. You've got bits and pieces of AI built into the Office 365 stack. They're all a little bit atomic, and some of it works better than the others. But there's been no real sense that you can just go in and say, like I can with, like I've got Warp Terminal, which is probably a little bit more fully functional than perhaps you would get from things like from Cursor or within VS Code or through an IDE, in that it's pretty much full autonomy over my environment if I grant it that. So whatever computer it's on or whatever computer I console into, it can do anything, right? Anything that can be done via the command line. So that's sort of the middle ground there. And so I've been doing a lot of the sort of stuff that OpenClaw can do just via what the command line can figure out on my local machine using Warp Terminal. But similar things can be done with Claude Code and so on, and AMP and stuff. They're all starting to coalesce. I have a preference for Warp, right? So and so I've been able to do... Yeah, coding tasks, but what about my, I've got a lot of photos, I'm an artist, I've got a lot of jobs that can be done, that need to be done that aren't very technical or not technical at all, that are boring, that are admin. And so I've got quite a sort of, but you know, obviously that sort of stuff exists on the consultancy side of our world, but I've got like a double whammy because I've got a whole bunch of other extracurricular stuff, all of which needs a certain amount of organization and so on. And it's like, well, where is the agent that can do all of that stuff for me? And the coding orientated ones are pretty good at it, right? But they tend to think about everything as a coding problem, right? Whereas it, you know, you can start, I started to set up repos that were not coding orientated, that might be, for example, I'm trying to translate my arts podcast, Art Against Mental Illness, wherever you get podcasts, plug, to a book, right? So there's no real coding in there. I just want an agent to help me to help me organize that. I ended up making a lot of sort of contextual agent only files all over a file structure, and just trying to put in context and instructions and skills everywhere. And this is, I think, where I started pulling on this thread, is there's got to be, someone has to have already done this, right? Why am I doing this myself? There's got to be someone must have already thought through this problem. And that's what eventually led me to OpenClaw, but OpenClaw's not the only one, but it's the noisiest one right now. As to how can I do those things now? How can I do things on my hard drive that I can give over to an agent a certain level of autonomy that says, oh, can you you know, schedule these blog posts for posting on my artist blog, but also build the blog post itself, add an image into it, and then also do a social post, right, that advertises the blog post on my artist blog, right? All stuff that I knew I should be doing, I just wasn't, right? Mm-hmm. And it's only been really recently that the agents have been capable to the degree that they can do that type of stuff, and I think OpenClaw was a pioneer here. I think we'll come back to the particular proclivities of OpenClaw and some of our experience with it, but I think we're sort of up to now in terms of what the capability can do. Did I miss anything?
No, I don't think so. I think that's kind of covers it. And you know, and they're growing all the time. As you were talking there, it made me think of, especially when you were talking about the layers and various instructions on your machine, just made me think of, you know, like an operating system. You know, effectively, you have, you know, originally we had computers and DOS green screens, and then you had this graphical user interface called Windows that was overlaid. And now, rather than sort of having to do a command, remember what that command was, you could sort of point and click And then you had the idea of, oh, you know, I'll store a file in folders and it looks like a desktop because, well, in an office you have a desk and you have things on your desk. And so you started to interact and effectively your real world desires to do things, you translated into things happening via, you know, a visual interface. And then obviously that exploded with applications and so forth. You know, and we've been riffing on that ever since with mobile phones and different form factors. But the idea really that, you know, you need something to be done and then there's a sort of an interface to make it happen. And, you know, we all know, like you say, that there's something you want to do. You've got a file, you take a photo of your art, you want that photo to have some words added to it. And then you want that posted on LinkedIn. And the fact that you could have an instruction or a skill, if you like, written down that says, oh, can you do that? And then you can have a machine that takes that instruction and then does all the point and clicks that are necessary, including maybe creating some text to describe the image, is a little bit like having a Windows application, except we haven't had to go through the pain of writing the application. Maybe all you've had to write down is, I want a skill that does these things, run it, and then say, oh, well, actually, we'll make sure it does this, and then check it by here. And then it does it a few times. You go, okay, well, that's now a skill I have. So it seems to have simplified the things that we've been doing for the last 30, 40 years on computers. And, you know, that's, I think we're just at the start of that. And OpenClaw, you know, and frameworks like that, I think there's another one called Hermes, you know, these agents which run are in a way similar to that sort of, yeah, that's some sort of form of interface, GUI interface, except for, you know, and an application interface, except for it all from a human perspective feels sort of simpler because I'm not coding it. And I might have to do a little bit of testing on it, or maybe I should do a lot if it's a very complex skill. But then it's there. And then also recalling it, you know, I don't have to open an application and press a button. I just say, oh, I've got this new photo. Can you do the LinkedIn thing on that? And it understands, in inverted commas, your English, translate that to the skill and goes and does it. And that feels... Oh, that feels like that's taken a lot of friction out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think so. And so if you think of to where we've actually got to here is that I've got a thing over here with my art. I've got an artist podcast. I've got my art practice. I run an art group. Then I've got consultancy. I've got marketing in the consultancy. I've got, us collaborating on stuff. We've got this podcast. And then we've got client work, client pitches and things like that. And then I've got just life. Right, as stuff and like everyone, I'm not pointing myself out as being any way exceptional here. I'm just pointing out this is what I've got. Here's a whole bunch of stuff, and I think what I was finding is I was over here trying to sort of unify the ways of thinking about things because I've got like 9 coding projects on the go as well. Remember, like the sort of, oh yeah, so I can use some of what I've learned for the coding project over here on my art project, right? And I'm starting to sort of think about setting up like little uniform infrastructures across all of those projects, but to make each of those projects easier to manage and to make them easier for language models to comprehend. But that in itself, that overall view, well now, you know, I'm not actually at the point where anything's simpler because I'm now having to think about all these different frameworks and how I'm doing things where and keeping track of projects and that I was sort of drowning in that, right? Drowning in optimization. Mm-hmm. Right. And we've been there and everyone's been there, right? I mean, most businesses are drowning in optimization at all times. So it's not a particularly new problem. But I think what I immediately saw with OpenClaw when I really started to think about this problem and then just thought, fuck it, you know, let's just do it and see what happens, was that really, it's the ability to orchestrate across all of that stuff that's the game changer for me, right? The using a centralized framework means that for better or for worse, you're going to be applying the same principles across all projects, and then I've got sort of one entry point. We're using Telegram, but you know, can be whatever. There's a TUI interface and a web interface, and then you can use other messengers, all of that. So, but the point is, you've got a text box, right? A chat, a back and forth chat capability, and the everything is done through that, right? Again, for better and for worse, or for worse, but forgetting about the particular capability of that type of interface and whether it's optimal, because I think we could lose a whole episode on that one. Just having that single window across all my projects and then being able to navigate that, saying simply, tell me the status of my art podcast projects. So Alex, you have 5 projects currently going with this one, an episode reorganization, you're doing some compilation episodes, you're doing this and that and the other. And it's told me the status of each of them, and that's just happened in one sentence, right? And then I can just switch modes and go, and actually tell me about our consultancy or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Strictly speaking, I have different interfaces into those different worlds, but for various reasons we can talk about. But I think that having that overall view, and that single point of entry and that single mode of operating across all of those things, and the ability for the agent underneath it to tweak its behavior based on what I'm doing, right? Because if I'm talking about like my artist website, it's all like WordPress and blah, blah, blah. Whereas if I'm in podcast world, I'm probably thinking about organizing content and trying to, working with text and so on. I needed something to bring that together. And thus far, OpenClaw's providing quite a good capability there.
Yeah, I could imagine. And that's the thing, is broadening out that thinking, like you say, that we've been used to around the code side into everything. Along with it, the infrastructure that OpenClaw or the agent needs to bring its skills, because certainly I was doing some testing around PowerPoint a couple of months ago, and you know, the difference in models was extraordinary. One would produce, as we talked about a couple of episodes ago, a very good version of a pack slide deck, which was definitely a good start off a 30 rather than a good start off a 10. But another model that produced literally one you wouldn't bother with, which was just 5 white slides with 3 bullet points on each, with no no headers, footers, anything like that. And you go, well, that's just 5 pages of notes. That's not adding any value. They need a baser level of capability. And like you said, that seems to be arriving now. And of course, that sort of makes perfect sense, because although conceptually you're dealing with art over here, and so images are, and then on this other project you're doing text code, but from a storing a file point of view, you know, there are certain commands and, you know, background stuff, which is exactly the same from a computer's point of view. And you just need the agent to take on that interface for you. So when you say, I'll store this, you don't care what format it's stored in. You don't have to go, I'll save as PNG or save as TXT. Agent's doing all that for you. Great. It's taking something from a folder over here and realizing it needs to go into a folder over here. Great. That's exactly what you want. And I think they are, you know, a lot of those skills are coming online now. So that, as with all these things, you know, is not necessarily reliable to begin with, but they're getting better as they get more experienced and, you know, and they get through their training loops. And so the latest version of X skill you know, has been trained a lot better, and so it can deal with, you know, some of the more common problems that come up. Not forgetting, of course, that these, they all operate within this, you know, this idea of the agentic loop, which, as you mentioned, is right, go and try and do something, do it. Okay, now I'm checking it because I've got skills to check it. Oh, it didn't work. Replan. Now execute the plan. Do it again. Then check it. Doesn't work. You know, and so it, and now they keep working until at least it's passed its rudimentary sort of checks. Okay, file now appears in folder I wanted it to. And then you go and look at it and realize the file's corrupted. But hey, at least it got there. So, you know, that's all improving.
So there's a couple of points there. One is that, I mean, it is all improving, right? So we, OpenClaw didn't exist really 6 months ago, right? Maybe 8 months ago. And it's the most starred project on GitHub, I believe. I haven't checked, but someone told me that. And so it's gone from something that one guy vibe coded over a weekend to having literally hundreds of contributors. And I think that whether that's a good thing or not, I guess, is a very open question. But it does suggest that it could be, you know, it really does seem to be evolving quite rapidly. And given that most of the people contributing to it are using AI to do exactly that, again, problematic, but it may add up to quite a lot more speed in terms of how quickly this stuff develops. You know, hopefully it doesn't make it more creaky, but we'll see. The other thing is, in terms of skills, is that, you know, I've got a particular view. We have a particular view into the world, be it, you know, on any side of our life. And that's going to be very different from someone else's. And so if you're a biochemist, I don't know why that popped into my brain, but it did. you should be able to use OpenClaw for doing your biochemistry shit, right? You know what I mean? The stuff that biochemists do, whatever that is. And it's not going to look very much. I mean, there's some overlap with what we do. Absolutely, there will be, but like not a lot. And so you've got, firstly, having an agent that is capable of helping anyone at the sort of base level to do the types of things that the majority of people are going to want to do, but then be able to adapt themselves to specialize into biochemistry or art or music making or whatever it is, right? Podcasting. And so part of that's down to how you prime it. You know, the agent comes up and I say, I'm an agent of nothing right now. Tell me who I am and what I do is basically the first thing that happens. And from that moment on, you're going through an iterative process of educating the bot. And it's quite a fun process in its own right. And then on top of that, you're like, well, you know, we get into the don't reinvent the wheel territory. I don't really know if there's a bunch of agent skills for biochemists out there, but I do know there's a bunch of agent skills, for example, data science, right? And also stuff like, you know, PowerPoint and Office 365. I noticed there's one for Shopify, because I have a Shopify shop on the art side of things. There's stuff for WordPress. There's, you know, I can't imagine that everything anyone has ever done has got a skill associated with it. But let's assume that you know, there is a lot out there. There are a lot of skills across the board for a lot of different things. And you don't do something, you just don't install it, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, part of that education process is go find a skill for doing this, because this is something I'm going to need to do quite a lot. And then choose your skills, or perhaps make your own skills. And so sort of the base in there, whether it's a universal base, I suggest it couldn't possibly be, but it knows, OpenClaw, for example, knows how to think about projects and tasks and things like that. And when you think about it as productivity on that side of things rather than the coding agent, you can be quite generic, right? You can start off just saying, well, here's just how you're going to do stuff. And chances are that stuff is going to be project and task based. Outside of that, here's a library of skills you can pull on, right? Or just listen to the user. I've not dug around in the innards of OpenClaw just yet. I absolutely will do. And I think it's probably worth mentioning, because it's, you know, just occurs to me, this is unlikely to be the last episode we do on this. This is our sort of first thoughts on OpenClaw and these types of agents. So I promise I will go and have a dig around on the inside. But I think, you know, that genericism is a strength. I've yet to see if it's a weakness or not.
Yeah. Yes. Well, it's interesting because there is a weakness to it, I think, which is some of the things we discussed before. So effectively, the genericism is you know, you've got a tool which brings the ability of each individual discipline, and that ability is, you know, average or slightly higher than average. So what I mean by that is, you know, if we take the example of, you know, redoing your website and thinking, okay, well, perhaps I need to, you know, get my art out in a different manner. And so, you know, you're not a marketing expert. You know, you've been in and out of it over the years. You know some, you know others, but you're not a marketing expert. It's not your day job. And so you can ask the machine for a strategy and, you know, certain steps, and it's going to come back with what we would consider a very good answer, and good enough probably to try out, thinking of test and learn. So, you know, the best way forward, you know, is to take the data which is applicable to your exact use case. So get started, start building that data, and then change course, so you don't have to get tied into, you know, a specific plan and strategy. I think the weakness is we will look at it and it will appear good because it will have good words in there. It will seem to make some logical sense. And we'll say, yeah, well, that seems pretty sound. Right, let's go and do that. I think the weakness is that a professional might look at it and go, yeah, that's a bit basic. And actually these two things are wrong here. And it's made this assumption here, which is really going to cost you on step 7. So if you do these first 5, you're going to be in real trouble. And we won't know that because we don't have that experience. And that to me is where one of the weaknesses comes in, is that you're able to get this above average view on something you know little about, but you then cannot discount that view because you don't have the experience, because you're not above average in that.
Yeah, Dunning-Kruger and all that. So I've got a partial counter to that. And a sort of a confirmation of it, I guess, is that the counter is, well, what I spend a lot of my time telling people is, if you're using LLMs in any form as a learning tool or to do things like creating strategy, you need to be very, very careful. They're not very good with information. Right, they're just bad, in fact, and so I think LLMs are more valuable for productivity than they are knowledge distribution, and the whole, you know, Dunning-Kruger kind of side of things, you know, thinking you know about more things than you do is one of the great trapdoors with LLMs, and I think to say that I am not subject to that or vulnerable to that is nonsense. But I tend to think with that example, that, you know, for example, the example that you made, I would definitely say to it, can you go and research on the web best practices for marketing art and then show me where you got that from, right? And also, you know, put in the framework for evaluating success on that thereof, right? Now, that's not particular to anything else. That's just good practice, right? And quite frankly, if you ask the human expert, you should still do the same thing. You should You know, for high stakes projects, you need to probably get more than one opinion, and you also need to put in a framework for, to measure success of what you've done. The fact that a lot of businesses don't do that, what says more about the businesses than anything else? And we, you, people like you and me, you know, our whole job is to think about things in those ways. So I although I agree with you, I think if you're cognizant, then you don't need to fall into that trap, right? But there's only so far you can go with that. And now, yeah, on the other side of it, though, is that I agree with you in the sense of what I'm doing when I'm running any agent is not all the time, but a lot of the time, not most of the time, I'm sitting there watching what it's doing. Because I'm not a very trusting individual, and also I'm quite curious, right? And so I'm watching how many times if you had an agent run doing something and you've just control C'd it and go, stop, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Right? It's like, and because I have the capability, I'm looking at it going, what? No, don't do that. And I see Claude doing that as much, and it's not necessarily, oh, I'm deleting all of your files off your, you know, your hard drive. It's more, oh, you're stuck in a loop, or you're going down a route here that I know is fruitless. And because I can understand the commands that are streaming past me. I have a lot of experience with dealing with agents from, you know, coding agents, and I can see what's happening, and I know when to intervene and where some of the strengths and weaknesses are. And I think that a lot of people will not have that, right? I think there's a lot of people using stuff like OpenClaw that don't really know what it's doing, right? And I think that's really dangerous. I think it's dangerous enough for me who does. I have to put the guardrails in. And one of the reasons it took me longer than I wanted to get all this set up is not because OpenClaw's hard to set up. It's because I'm bloody paranoid, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm not having you run Riot on my operating system, right? It's not a good idea. So I think it's a double-edged sword. We caution going down the route of don't use this because, you know, the world will end. But, you know, do use mindfully, basically.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. I like the idea, as you mentioned, of, you know, the framework around. I go and find out this for me. Okay, well, where did you source it? You know, give me the reasons why you use that. And that's how I use them a lot. I'll get it to do something for me, and I'll go, oh, that seems really good. You now give me, ask for 3 points and you give me 8, and they're all quite complex. So, you know, can you break this down? And then you start to, you know, and this is a good thing, you can interact. So if it gives you an 8 point, like, you go through each step one at a time and then say, oh, right. So even this example, for this step, why did this? Are you saying that this would happen? And then sometimes you can actually, as you reason through them, they go, oh, well, no, that wouldn't work here. You're like, okay, so what would work? And they come up with something different. And yeah, that's good. That's iterating and moving forward. What I find quite funny is that at no point do they go, oh, yeah, I was sorry about that. Yeah, of course, that wouldn't work. And they just go, yeah, that wouldn't work with your suggestion, you know, like kind of blame you that you raised. So hold on, you're the one that came up with it first. But that, that doesn't really matter too much. That working forward through something, you know, using your logic, which, as you say, does counter slightly, you know, don't swallow this thing whole. If you, you know, it's that age old thing that people use in meetings and stuff, you know, explain it to me like I'm a 5-year-old. And if it can't do it and you don't understand it, then probably going and executing on that might not be such a good idea. So perhaps you should spend a bit longer. Of course, as you say, not everybody does that. And certainly in a business context, sometimes it can be under a bit of pressure. Two things, I think, is one, you're under a bit of pressure to get something out. Two, perhaps it takes a certain type of person, and certainly we don't, and I find myself doing it less with humans, is someone will say something, you think, God, I didn't understand that. And you have to have a certain amount of trust to go, sorry, you said something there that I didn't get it. Can you explain that to me? And sometimes you can get away with it. Sometimes you think, well, I don't want to be the dumb guy in the room, you know. Of course, with LLMs, that doesn't matter, but does it? Are some people, you know, still stuck a little bit in, well, it's come up with something here. I don't want to question it. It seems pretty smart. I'll just move on it. and they're in some danger lies. And of course, what that points to is actually there's some skills emerging here of how to work well with models and agents, which, as you say, is, you know, curiosity. There's some observation in there. There's the idea that it's going to come up with a bunch of stuff which you don't understand. And so you've got to be able to work in a sort of a certain amount of grayness. You've got to be willing to push back and say, well, actually, I don't understand that. Explain that to me better. You know, there are some definite skills emerging there, which, you know, aren't for everybody, but I think it's actually quite good. You know, you've got analysis in there. You've got some, you know, critical thinking, curiosity. There's an amount of, I've got to be able to sit there passively reading these messages as they shoot by me as to his reasoning and maybe try and catch something. And not for everybody, but there's definitely some skills there which help work with these agents in a better manner, for sure.
Yeah. Now, talking about working with them, so, you know, this sprouted from one of my ADHD hyperfocus episodes, but one of the use cases I wanted to tackle was us collaborating on things, but within an agent. I mean, it used to be that back in the day, you know, that like last year, that let's say we wanted to do an overhaul of our little website. It's cool, there's only two of us, so or we want to do something on the podcast or something. Well, it's something that spans both our domains. We might, you know, we live in different parts of the country. We might get on a call, chat about what we want to do, and then divide that task up, or whether it's something that's obviously me or something that's obviously you, go off, do some things, come back, talk about it, rinse, repeat. I won't get sidetracked with the and then I forget I'm supposed to be doing it. You have to remind me. I decide it's too boring and decide to re-engineer the task to be something different that's more interesting, and then nothing ever gets done. So let's just assume we are getting stuff done. In a post AI world, that changes, because let's say I wanted to make some changes to the website. I'm, you know, dear ChatGPT, can you please make these changes to the website? Sit there, watch some stuff scroll up my screen, and then a minute later, if that, sometimes seconds, I've got the result, right? Mm. And so you said to me, you know, oh, Alex, would you mind just going to fix this thing on the website, right? I just did it. And it's probably, that's not the best example, because ultimately you can just go test it. So what if we were doing multiple iterations on lots of different versions on lots of different pages, mocking things up and all sorts of stuff like that, right? You know, each iteration isn't going to last long. Actually, the thing is, you and me then looking at it and going, yeah, I agree with that, I don't agree with that, and actually it's a very, in the current scenario, that's a very tight loop interaction, right? Mm. So and also I think that you and me say a lot of words both on this podcast and off, and we might well have forgotten what we said at the beginning of a conversation by the time we get to the end of it, partly because, you know, the stuff at the beginning might be not relevant or not interesting or useful anymore, or we just forgot, right? And it's just this idea that actually I want to capture all the words, and I want to be able to do things iteratively and then capture decisions, right? Okay, mm-hmm. So we decided to make the header blue instead of green. Why did we said we'd do that? Actually, it's not either of those colors, but there. You know, why did we decide to do that? Well, that wasn't captured. It was on a call either we made the change manually or LLM did it and blah, blah, blah. And so getting lost in the weeds here, trying to sort of paint a picture as to why I wanted a shared agent, right? And whether we've got it or not is an open question. I will state that. But like, well, surely if I can do these things with OpenClaw, we can manage projects, we can do all that good stuff we've been talking about, and we can do things like collaborate on projects in real time and jump between projects and so on. That I'm not saying we don't talk to each other. I'm just simply saying all the stuff that happens between that is slowed down because we can't be on the phone all day, or that we can't, you know, be sitting there, you know, pinging, you know, Slack posts at each other all day. That is there something that's sort of quasi synchronous and has an autonomous element to it? So we have that conversation in Telegram, because this is what we're using now, to make that change to the website and then just go, well, our agent is called Ada. Ada, see the conversation above. Can you make that happen? Right. Yeah. And then Ada comes back with, let's say it's a mock-up or a screenshot of the change that she's made. That comes straight into the chat, and then you and me can go, you can look at it and go, I'm good with it, but Ada has the instruction to not go ahead until we've both approved. You can then just go do something else. You know what I mean? So yeah. That's just one of many possible scenarios, and that's kind of where we're at. So we have Ada in a Telegram chat, and she will respond if we address her, we at address her directly, and she runs on my the always on PC under my desk that runs Linux, and can actually do stuff. So has access to our Obsidian Brain, which is our repository of all our information, all the podcast episodes, and also a certain amount of executive ability on the actual machine itself. So she lives in a Docker container, but has, you know, all the usual tools, can do web searches, can create files, can manage things, but can't actually touch my all the other stuff, because that's got my life on that computer. I have another agent that can see everything, but Ada can only see stuff that relates to the stuff that we're working on together, right? So that brings us to where we are. Mm. I sort of did this a bit autonomously in the background, going, here's what we're doing, Pete, and you should go, okay then. So feel free to be candid here, but you know, because we could throw this away, right? It's an experiment, but what's your thoughts so far?
Exactly that. I think, as I was sort of saying at the beginning, this stuff for me is fairly layered in already. You know, it's not anything new. So you're like, oh yeah, I want to do this, and I was thinking, okay, fine, not quite sure the point. And you're like, oh, well, we can collaborate on all these changes. I was thinking, I didn't know we were planning to do those changes. I'm sure we will, you know. But because it's so sort of natural, it sort of makes sense. And the moment it's sort of up and running, and, you know, you can start asking some questions, you go, okay, well, that seems vaguely useful. But then it's one of those things that the moment you have it, it's like, all right, so, you know, because in every day I'm using agents all the time, asking questions, finding out about things, you know, some really, you know, not worth talking about, others a bit more complex. And so that's just a natural part of my sort of day to day. But like you say, and so you'd do that on your side, I'll do it on my side, but now we have a joint one. And of course, the good thing about that is I can ask a question, which is I think is pertinent to our group, and then everyone sees the answer. And it's not a big thing to begin with, and you think, oh, but that's quite useful. And then, like you say, so then you could say, right, well, we're talking about something. Oh, that's quite a good idea. And then you say, oh, Ada, can you just do that then? We've talked about podcast episodes. Are they a good idea? Right, can you make a list of podcast episodes and include all the ones above and these three here? So we've now got a common repository for brainstorming podcast episodes, which really easy to set up. And I'm sure we've made several lists in the past anyway. But that kind of happened, you know, that just happened on the fly, We've now got, you know, we'll have effectively a skill that says, you know, add podcast episode, and it'll just get added in and we can go and look at them. Again, really simple, really easy, not major way to say this is, you know, big game changer, but it works. And then, like you say, so then next we'll be talking about the website. We'll say A, B, C, and look at this, and, oh, let's try this, let's try this. And we would have previously, you know, had a specific session, and we have actually done this in the past. And there are certain changes you can make live as you're chatting. And, you know, some of those changes are, well, what about the box on the top right? You know, we all know we're at HTML and everything. That's sort of an easy change to make. And maybe it's a drag and drop if we're using some sort of design tool. But, you know, after a few of those, it all starts to get a bit messy and can't remember where we were. And, oh, actually, that's now not working. Oh, now this bit over here has failed. You know, you walk into those sort of issues. Whereas now, hopefully, we have an agent which will just make the change, you know, once we get her up and running with those. And so you talk through the change and go, oh, no, that looks rubbish. Go back to the one before, and it's just going to do a, you know, rollback and display what was there before. Now, getting to that point is still going to require a bit of work, as we found when you said, oh, show me that image, and you had to reboot her about five times just to get it to work. But, you know, what I feel with these things is stuff like that, which is just computer stuff, display a file which is a PNG format, or first create the PNG in a tool and then display it on this chat, it is not a hard problem to solve. It's just a hard problem for the agent right now, but it's going to get solved. And so things like that, I think, no problem, you know, that's going to come. That then removes friction from, like you say, collaboration. And to roll that out a little bit, you know, it comes into that sort of meeting thing. You know, you have a meeting because you have things that you want to move forward on. You need representations from different points of view, and you want to get agreement on those. And quite often you do that in a meeting, and then someone takes the actions, and then you have to convene a week later or a few days later or a month later, whatever it is. And then you review those actions. And what we're saying is, well, if you're collaborating over the right thing and you've got the right agent, those actions might be done whilst you're sitting there. So rather than coming back next week and review the work, you actually just go to the toilet, come back, and then review the work. And so that feels like, you know, that's a kind of bit of a game changer there. I think there's a lot to go into that. You can't just throw that into any meeting, and meetings which are just there for, you know, a 1 week review or something. But if you are actually reviewing something that can be, you can take action on, and that action can be done by an agent and done there and then, and why wouldn't you change the nature of that meeting rather than a standing look at meeting to a collaborative doing meeting?
I think the key word I think you used there was friction, right? Because part of me was, I mean, you're reading that back to me again, well, like, everyone could already do this, right? If you wanted to redesign a website, you can do real-time collaboration on things like Canva and stuff. And it's sort of not, it's a bit by the by for us. It's not really how we work. But like, some of this feels like, oh, well, this is a really old hat. But something about using the agent in the way that we're doing doesn't. It feels like, whether it's a game changer or not, perhaps the jury's out, but it's certainly a big step forward. And I think it's that sort of real-time nature and the reduction of friction. And it's really, you know, if we could have ever afforded a project manager for all our little things, I would have employed one, right? I mean, I doubt we could justify a full-time one, but I want a project manager. I'm bad at this stuff, right? And you sort of want a project manager, stroke PA, stroke whatever, that, you know, you can sit, literally say, well, I'm making notes on this. It's like saying, well, I'm sending an email to someone, I'm going to CC you, right? You know what I mean? And it's like it all happens through a centralized portal that can also then just go and do those things, right? And so, yes, of course, I can go on to any number of agents and get a thing done and just tell you I did a thing, but like there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes on if we do it centrally that means that we're both up to speed and everything at all times, right? And the thinking and the actions and the so on is just there, explicit, logged. And some of these things, as I said, they're multi-stage, they're projects, they're stuff that go on in the background. There's some potentially actual software engineering going on, rebuilding websites, creating stuff. And it's all just sort of there where you can see it, where I can see it, and you can pick up where I left off, and then you can have reminders through that central portal and so on. Again, this is stuff that, to some degree, is catered for. Mm-hmm. I'm just finding the rubber hits the road aspect of this quite energizing, because so many problems are going away, right? Both using it sort of personally and using it as a collaboration tool.
Yeah, I think the collaboration is the new bit here for us, isn't it? Yeah, so we've both been using these agents individually, and so now there's a bit of discovery going on of when you're all in it together, which I think is good, because you, as with all things, when you have more than one person, you start to compound both the benefits and the problems. But if you have a creative discussion with an agent and then I can chip in, I might bring in an angle that nudges it somewhere where it wouldn't have gone, and then that makes you think of something, so you then think of something else, and then that prompts the agent to come back with another suggestion, and so you're in a sort of upward spiral. Equally, I could see you could be on downward spirals with creating more obstacles and coming up with issues why you might not move forward, but then maybe that's not a bad thing. So I think that's good. What was interesting there, you were saying about, essentially, As you move through any project or any work, a bunch of tasks get created, and you can classify them in two ways: tasks I like doing and I think I'm going to be good at, and then the bits that I don't like. And what's interesting about bits I don't like, which often are a little bit mundane and maybe a bit fiddly, don't feel like you're adding much value, I think in general, these are what get handed off to other people, because what happens is they build up, if you're just fulfilling a role at work. And so you get rewarded for doing stuff that you like doing, and you do that well because you're motivated by it, and people go, oh, that's great. And then they go, oh, but you don't seem to have read any emails I've sent you for the last, 14 days. So I've got to mark you down for that. And you say, oh, everyone sort of rolls their eyes. Are you paying me to read emails, or are you paying me to actually, do code? And so then you want to, I'll have an assistant then that'll read emails and then highlight them to me. And, in the good old days, now we've got to employ someone, and maybe, they've become sort of remote assistants, and maybe you'll have one assistant that reads emails for sort of 5 or 10 senior people or whatever, and highlights and books their meetings, and then maybe they can do some other things while they're sitting there not doing much. And they'll be seen to be, sort of lower paid and dare I say entry level jobs. And so as people start to use agents to do the mundane and find out that stuff they don't like doing now gets done, and it gets done pretty well, because as we said, the agents are doing, they do generally a slightly better than average job on most things. And is a slightly better than average job of highlighting my emails and replying to them good enough for me and good enough for my boss, the answer is probably yes. And that means that assistant's job has now disappeared. And so that, in quotes, entry-level job has gone, which is a lot of what people are talking about at the moment, is that seems to be biting. I think there was just a report came out from Stanford, and that was one of the points it made, is that the entry-level job shrinkage and some of the reporting around what AIs are getting good at are beginning to coincide. And I find it interesting for a couple of reasons, is that might be the writing on the wall of what's coming. But also it shows an element of laziness in us all, which is, well, I don't want to do the things I don't like. So if I get someone else to do it, then that's great. And then over the years, that's become, oh, well, we'll get the juniors to do that. which isn't necessarily a great introduction for them into the role, but nevertheless gives them something to do, which is sort of easy and none of us have to worry about it too much. Now, if that's going away, sort of means that when you employ your juniors, we actually got to think about what they're doing rather than just giving them all the dross that you didn't like doing. So it's a double-edged sword there. That, it's bad because maybe there won't be some work for them to do, but, you know, it's doing away with a bit of laziness, which is we shouldn't have really been getting them to do that anyway. If you're going to employ people, we're employing them to do, you know, worthwhile things, not just the dross you don't want to do. So I don't know what you think about all of that.
Yeah, I think that's an episode in itself. I think both of us as parents of teenage kids, oh, Jesus, they're not kids anymore. My youngest is 6'3", so a giant kid. So, I mean, it really bothers me. In defense of how we're doing this, there's absolutely no way I can see us ever have been, certainly on the art side of things. I can't even sell enough artwork to justify buying more art equipment, let alone paying someone to do my admin. This stuff was not getting done, right? And I think that's the same on our side of things. I think we're not in the market for a junior. I hope at some point in the near future we are, right? And there's a certain amount of stuff that we are obviously going to automate away. But as you point out, I think if a junior comes on, they're going to be skilled up. Our job will be to skill them up. And quite frankly, if they're not using AI to get rid of the boring shit stuff, then why did we employ them? Right.
Yeah.
So I think there's a certain amount of that there. And it's a new world, right? And I think we all have responsibility to make sure that the next generation isn't left for shit. And, you know, when we're too old to run our sprawling consultancy, you know, I mean, who have we then trained up to take our place, right? Well, nobody, you know what I mean? And goddamn ChatGPT isn't going to do it. And so, I mean, there is a big societal, you know, landslide going to happen. I mean, in some ways, unavoidable. And comparisons to the Industrial Revolution and the Luddites and all this stuff, we can get into that another day, perhaps. But I certainly think, in the context of this conversation, it feels separate to me. And if you look at the way that OpenClaw is organized and what it's pointing out, all these warnings when you fire it up, going, this is a sort of a one-to-one single person agent environment, which is one of the reasons I had to do a little bit of fancy footwork to set up an environment where multiple people could use it safely. There's some stuff that can be said about that, but probably gets quite technical. But the point of it being is that OpenClaw is, you know, who was going to respond to all your emails? Well, you were. What are you doing now when something else is responding to your emails? Well, hopefully more productive stuff. And that's the dream, and that's what they're selling, and that's what OpenAI and Anthropic are selling. Unfortunately, you know, the next extrapolation on that is exactly what you're talking about. So, if we're talking about and acting in the spirit of why this stuff exists, I don't think anyone's lost. It feels, you know, things like environmental issues and, you know, evil corporations aside, it feels like a net gain, right? But as you point out, right, the moment you get outside of the realm of me using OpenClaw for doing stuff that, you know, for making me more productive, and us using OpenClaw as a collaboration tool and to make us more productive, I don't see who lost here, right?
Yeah.
But you make a good point, because the next level outside of that does include people losing out.
Yeah. But, well, and this then comes into the, you know, the age old, oh, well, you know, everyone will retrain. And what this highlights to me, which I haven't really thought about before, is there are definite gaps in this technology, and filling those gaps is really where it's at. So, you know, we've talked about managing, you know, an agent, which is doing all the boring stuff. And so, what does that mean? It means you got, as you said earlier, you know, there's some critical thinking about what it's telling you. There's pushing back. There's checking that what it's done is good. There's then ensuring that there are skills which become repeated. So if you've done a check and done some QA, is that QA stored? And then one of the things it does, you know, is it will go deep. And this came back from our chat with Toby the other week. And he talked about, you know, the T-shaped person. And, you know, so you can go broad, you know, good breadth of knowledge and depth. You know, and you think about these AIs, that's kind of exactly how they're going to be used. You know, they've got very broad thinking. You can ask them anything, they're going to come back with a fairly decent answer. But they can also go deep on many subjects. And they have an advantage over humans there. But like I say, what I've seen, my experience of going deep on the stuff I know about is there, and will they ever be good enough to go deep without being checked? My feeling is for the next couple of years is no, you're constantly going to have to push. And even if they do it well, you still need to tell whether they do it well. So there's a gap here that says, well, rather than a person that's an expert in one thing, you know, I'm managing this bot that's dealing with this consultancy that's doing all of these things. And it's taking these meeting notes, and it's produced these actions, and it's taken these. Well, we need to make sure that those actions are sound. We need to push back. We need to make sure there's critical thinking. We need to make sure there's a feedback loop for learning for the agent. It's then going in depth and executing this part of the project with 17 steps quite into molecular biology. Well, I don't know much about that, but I've got to learn. So I've now got to spend 3 days with an agent going through that, making sure everything's logically sound. And where necessary, you know, calling on some higher expertise. All of that sounds like valuable, interesting work, which isn't sort of repetitive, requires, you know, great skill, requires flexibility, lots of good skills in there. And are we going to need that sort of role in the next few years continuously? I find it hard to think, you know, how do you get the agents to take over that role? I mean, do you see what I mean? So I think there's a real opportunity there. I think that's the real opportunity that might take up a lot of jobs is you're not doing the write the email, store it here, file this bit of paper over here. You're making sure that a process is, you know, an agent is doing that. You're making sure that process is good. Once it's good, move on, take on a new process. So feels like a very good role to me. I'll take it.
I mean, I think that really the extrapolation on that is if you're a knowledge worker now, your job sometime in the next few years will transform into being a manager of agents, and that those skills will matter, but those skills will be domain dependent as well, right? So there's no such thing as an AI expert, right? You know, are there people who take the place of things like projects and program management or delivery and things like that, whose job it is to be an expert in pharmaceutical supply chains, whose job ultimately is to be an expert on how AIs do things and also pharmaceutical supply chains, right? So the expert in a delivery sense at any given point in time is the person who has that overlap between understanding the domain and understanding the technology. And that's where we are anyway, right? You know what I mean? That's where we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago. It's just that the technological base and the delivery practice has changed. And it's going to take a while for that to filter through everywhere, right? So yeah, it's going to be a bit of a messy transition. And I don't think that solves the problem of what jobs are we all going to have? You know, are there going to be enough jobs to go around? But I see that somewhere in our future.
Yeah, it's definitely changing for sure.
Yeah. So in terms of future, seeing into the future, I see through my crystal ball a follow-up episode to this where, having lived with agents, probably got bored with Unplumbed, changed everything, you know, moved on to some other agent, Hermes or something, that we do a review of this. Might be the next episode, might not.
Yeah.
Watch this space. Right. Okay. Let's call it for today. And I'm just going to go back to typing more commands into my interface so that Ada can do more of my work for me and I can put my feet up.
And I will be watching.
As you do. Right. Nice one. Brilliant. Cheers.
Right. Night. Bye, everyone.
The Confusion Matrix.